Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Wrestle hard.
And welcome back to Mindset Monday. Today we have a very special treat for all of our watchers. We have the great Nick Perler with us. Nick, thanks for joining us.
You called me the great. My dog's name is Titus the Great. So
that's it.
Anyway, hey, it's good to be here. I'm a big fan of you guys. I remember when you started years ago, we chatted a few times and I was like, wrestling world needs something like this. So I'm a big fan of what you guys are offering. And, you know, I know a lot of our campers and athletes have joined in with you guys. And it's great to see. You're doing a great thing.
Thank you. You too. It's always motivating watching your videos and always love hearing your opinion about things. So
thanks.
Excited to have you on the show. So let's take it from the top. We were talking about this a moment ago. Myself and a lot of wrestlers are interested. Where do you start wrestlers to train? You have a wealth of knowledge and experience. You know, based on your expert opinion, what would you have a kid do when he just starts, or at what age should they start playing sports? When do they get into wrestling? Take it from the top.
Yeah. So, I mean, my grandson, every Thursday I spend with him, he just turned three. We do like a little tumbling gymnastics thing, right? So it's very cool. So I think the earlier, the better, you know, as far as getting your kids involved in activities and things. And obviously he's learning to take kind of the lead of another adult, sit in line, wait his turn. All these things are very important too, right? But as far as when to start wrestling, I think if you start him younger, like, you know, four or five, I would just avoid tournaments. I really think that from a tournament setting, you're probably better off at seven. We have a handful of six-year-olds and quite a few seven-year-olds who come to our academy, which is probably 50% high school, and then the other 50% is middle school youth. And our youth kids, a lot of them don't train year-round. If they do, they come to maybe just 1-2-hour practice a week. But I've noticed a big difference maturity-wise between a 6- and a 7-year-old. So, you know, I'd say I wouldn't start the tournament. So starting wrestling as young as you can. I mean, we have a little wrestling mat in my basement. And my grandson comes over and he wants to come and wrestle. So, you know, just rolling around. And I think the earlier the better. But I would just avoid the tournament side of it until they have a year of experience, maybe more. And, you know, they have a season of live wrestling. Maybe they're doing practices twice a week in a peewee room, and they've been rolling around since they were five. They've done an organized practice as 6 years old, still doing other sports in the summer and things, obviously. And then as a seven-year-old, getting them into a handful of tournaments, I think is a good thing. I don't necessarily think every single weekend, you know, we want to be able to, I tell my parents this too, of our athletes, the NCAA wrestling has changed. Some of these guys have like 18 matches going to NCAA tournament. Their season's 7 months long, right? There's something called resting your nervous system. We're throwing these little kids, some of you parents are, every weekend into these big tournaments. And I'm like, no, he needs a couple weekends to sleep in and, you know, be a kid. And so I would, more so than just having the skill level to compete, You know, I would say get them a year of experience before you enter them into the tournaments. Make sure they have a lot of live wrestling, tons of live wrestling, so they can develop the feel and the awareness. And when you do enter them into tournaments, maybe as a seven-year-old, you know, let's not overdo it. Maybe go to a couple of tournaments a month. And if you wrestle two weekends back to back, that's cool. Take a weekend off, make it fun. But, you know, at the youth level and high school, we should do probably a little bit more like what the college coaches have been doing over the past decade, and not throwing them into the fire every weekend, because, you know, by the end of season, I've done it and you probably have too. Back in our day, my day in the 90s, I mean, it was like Army boot camp every practice. And I mean, we're physically and emotionally just done by the end of season, and we're mentally tough guys, and we're done. So I think the college coaches have done a much smarter job of this. And I think we need to think about that too when we're talking about the youth level.
Yeah, and you said you start them doing gymnastics, they play all different sports. Yeah. When they start wrestling, what are the first things they should be learning? Like, assuming a kid's first time on the mat, now you're going to give them some wrestling instruction. Is it stance and motion right away? Is it penetration step? What moves should they learn? What kind of sequence would you move in, and why?
Yeah. So it depends on, so if you have a first year wrestler who's 6 or 7, and then you have a first year wrestler who's 14, there's a big difference. But, you know, we pretty much avoid now head outside attack, double leg only. We don't like going to any kind of a high crotch, no fireman's carry, no near arm far leg, no low single leg, no ankle pick, none of that. Just a basic double leg. And, you know, like a Jordan Burroughs double, which is what we call it now, sweep single leg to maybe a quick change off snake and spin. That's probably the only leg attack I would do: head outside double, head in the chest double, single leg with a mid-level finish and a low-level finish. That's it. And from top, just wrestling from across wrist, maybe an inside cradle, half Nelson. Bottom, we would just do knee slide stand up, you know, punch the sky stand up, maybe tripod stand up. And that's all I would do. I would probably just stick with 6 or 7 techniques and just drill the tar out of those. And what I did when my son was little, and I've done because, you know, I kind of volunteered for a whole season as a youth coach. We had 4 to 6 year olds. And I did this because, you know, we have our online academy, our video series and stuff. And when I put that out in 2005, I wanted to be a coach. So I coached a youth team. I ran one practice a week for them, and it was very helpful, you know. And so what I had learned to do, which I still give dads and parents and coaches advice now, is, so let's say they're just drilling, like, you know, a down block, you know, they're sprawling to a front headlock and hitting a go behind. That's another technique from a front headlock, maybe a snake too. But hit 5. Okay, good. Partner hits 5. Okay, let's go 5 more. Partner goes 5 more. Okay, now let's live wrestle for 3 minutes. Okay, let's go 5 more, wrestle for 3 minutes. So you don't save live wrestling for the end. You do a lot of live wrestling during the 1 hour and 15 minute practice, and you're going to really have a much better practice if you do it that way. But from a technique standpoint, everything that we do is based on the common positions, because we think about the 95-5 rule. 95% of your points come from 5% of the wrestling. Those are around the common positions. So let's say we're wrestling and you stand up and I'm behind you, I have to return you to the mat. That's going to happen about 4 times a match. And I've counted all of this stuff out years ago. And ear to ear collar tie, especially high school and kids wrestling, maybe not always ear to ear, but they're going to collar tie a lot, about 8 times a match. 50 varsity matches, 400 times this year, plus practice. If you wrestle year round, 7,000 times this year. So we have 5 ways to score from a collar tie: 2 ear to 3 ear to ear, 2 forehead to forehead. Why is that? Because it's a common position. So from a youth level, when you're starting to look at 6-year-olds and 7 and 8-year-old beginners, you still want to use that common position sort of framework. But obviously, you know, we're not going to elbow pass, hit a drive single leg, run the pipe to a quick change off at that level. We're not even going to worry about an elbow pass, but we might hit a collar jerk as a little peewee wrestler. The most easy basic one, because their opponents are going to grab their head with the collar tie. So, you know, you kind of look at the positions that they're in all the time, and you say, we pretty much say, what's the best 2 to 3 ways to score from these common positions? And then at a more advanced level, we start to have to worry about the counters to counters, right? So we kind of prioritize everything. So at a very basic beginner level, we have a wrist trap, a go behind, and a snake, three ways to score. But like at our advanced academy, which is called the Perler Wrestling Academy, world-class wrestler program. I stole that name from the Army, world-class athlete program. And we just had 26 of our wrestlers the past year and a half go Division One, and 25 came from that room. So it's very good. But so in there, we have 11 ways to score from a front headlock. But a couple of those are counters to counters when their opponent gets to their feet, circling out of a front headlock. They're fighting the chin hand. So it's, but a wrist trap, a go behind, and a snake is on their practice plan too. So you started saying, what's the common positions? What's the best 2 to 3 ways to score from those? And now we start to kind of compartmentalize our techniques into positions. And then we sort of prioritize based upon skill level and needs. So, you know, if I hit a high crotch, you're not going to sit the corner on me in the high school freshman tournament, probably, because those kids are probably making varsity. So do we need to really worry about how to counter? Well, we call it a shoulder slip. Everyone else calls it sit the corner. We got two ways to counter that, but we don't drill those in, you know, our phase one program, but our phase two and phase three, we do. So that's kind of how we do it. But I think just talking about this, your listeners can kind of sort of say, oh yeah, we do have about, you know, 3 to 5 front headlocks a match. What are the best ways to score from there? Oh yeah, wait, he's 7. We don't really need to hit a shuck. Okay, let's scratch that off, coach. That was silly. We shouldn't even be talking about that. How about a snake? Oh yeah, how about a go behind? How about a wrist trap? Okay, let's just stick with those. And then you can say, man, I can come up with 2 or 3 more that could really be useful. Don't do it, because that's called opportunity cost, right? Time spent drilling 6 ways to score from a front headlock is taking time away from these 3 very most vital. So let's under teach over drill. And that's kind of our phrase that we've been using for years. So don't you, it's called chasing the idea fairy sometimes, right? We don't want to chase these. Let's just stick right here. So you got to be disciplined as a coach, because it's very difficult sometimes, especially at the youth level, when you have 6 or 8 wrestling dads who are all head coach. And they're all wanting to weigh in, and it just makes that a big mess. So common positions, and really come up with just the best 2 or 3 ways and just do those. And you're going to find out these kids are start to have success, because they're actually starting, we're limiting their choices.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And a lot of times we look at it from a mental point of view. It's like kids, if they're thinking about so many different moves, there's no clarity. Right. So we break that into our clarity series. How do you, when you look at those basic positions, are you looking at most common positions neutral, and then most common positions top bottom?
Yeah. Yeah. And also from a front headlock, or, you know, like there's ways to counter how to kick out of a single leg. And I just talked with Alex Clemson a few minutes ago. He's at Maryland, right? And he actually trained with us when he was a high school guy. So he's just an awesome guy. I'm a big fan of Alex's and what they're doing at Maryland. But I guarantee you at their practices, they're learning to anticipate the kick out, how to stop it, how to climb the body, right? We're not going to do that at the high school level. So to answer your question, common positions for where we're at is kind of what we're doing. So I'm not going to say that. Well, I would say this. If I have like me and my nephew lives with me now. He's going to go to Fargo. Very good. Won it as a sophomore, was a runner up as a freshman. And so we might individually work those things. So if you're a coach who has like a really good team, like, you know, hardcore team, they wrestle a lot year round. And I mean, you know, there's a difference. You're in a small town in Idaho. You may barely have a full lineup. Most of those kids maybe didn't start wrestling until they were freshmen. You got them off the football field. You're going to coach those kids differently than obviously Blair Academy. But, you know, Kyle Kluskins, who's become a friend of mine, just a hard charging young man. He's a great coach in Wisconsin. So you have 2 high school coaches, one's in Idaho, one's in Wisconsin. But his Wisconsin team, I mean, they're hardcore, right? So he might actually do some of these other technical areas, but it's probably individually during live wrestling where he grabs a kid and says, hey, let's work over on this. So I think sometimes when we put something on our practice plan, we're only putting on our practice plan for two guys or, you know, this girl and this guy who are really could utilize it. Again, because we don't want to drill the whole team on, you know, how to anticipate in the two ways to counter a kick out of a single leg when they need to be head blocking, down blocking, thumb blocking, knee sliding on bottom, getting out of a front headlock, you know, learning how to counter across wrist so they don't get tilted. So I would say, don't forget that you might have like a little sticky note on your clipboard that is just for, you know, Kelly and John. So that's how I would handle that. But as far as common positions, I would just say use your experience and your common sense as a varsity coach or a JV coach and or a youth coach with 12 to 14 year olds or youth coach with 5 to 6 year olds, and just some common sense and a little bit of trial and error would be good.
Yeah, that makes sense. And now when the kids are young, what are some things, maybe mistakes coaches make that they have kids do a little too early, or kids really have a hard time grasping that maybe you want to push off a little bit until later? Is there anything like that?
Yeah, I would say setups. Let's just get inside tie. You know, let's keep one thumb in the armpit, and let's keep our head a little bit lower than yours, and let's just get to those legs. We don't need to hit a post. We don't need to score from an underhook. We just don't, you know. It is kind of funny because TJ Jaworski was a three-time NCAA champ for North Carolina, and he came to Oklahoma State for a couple of years, and he ended up transferring out and was a three-timer, right? And he and my brother battled for the spot a couple of times, but TJ was just one of the best college wrestlers I've ever seen, and a great dude. And I remember him one time, he was still in college. Maybe I was in Texas. I can't remember. Maybe did a clinic, but he was like, we don't need all those setups. Just get inside tie and get to the legs. And I'm like, you know, he's going for his third title. So I do think that sometimes we maybe just don't really understand the instincts of scoring. But I also think that as a youth wrestler or any beginner, a freshman beginner wrestler who's never wrestled before, doesn't need to be doing a chop post, right? Or fake head snap, single leg. They just need to get inside ties and make sure their head's a little lower than their opponents. So that's number one. Number two would be, I wouldn't hit any head outside leg attacks. So I think we already discussed that. It just causes a lot of issues. So I would not do that. Head outside leg attack should be a double leg, no high crotch. That's probably the main two I can think of.
How about top bottom? Would you say anything like learn maybe six moves? Or you said those 6-7 moves, that includes neutral and top bottom.
Yeah. So there might be 6 or 7 if you're a first year 5 or 6 year old, but the 7 year old, we might add a few that would include those others, right? So you might actually add to the list a little bit. Like I would probably just do a basic far side cradle as a little kid, but you get a 7 year old who was in your room or rolling around with dad since he's 5, wrestled as a 6-year-old, practiced twice a week, maybe did some camps in the summer, plays other sports, really has a good handle on it. 7 years old, he might need a cross-face cradle, right? He might need a front headlock, you know, we call it a giant step cradle. He might be able to benefit from that. So your plan is here, and we add a few things for his group now. So I don't think you can say, oh, only these 7 or, you know, but I wouldn't have 12 or 15 things for the peewee wrestler. But, you know, 2 ways to score from a front headlock, 2 single leg finishes, 1 double leg, just wrestling from the inside. Definitely a lot of down blocking, right? We say feet wide, touch a mat. Don't let your opponent read your shirt. If I don't let you read my shirt, you can't get my legs. So just being bent over at the waist is absolutely will solve a lot of problems in kids wrestling. So a lot of down blocking, that's probably 10 times more important than shooting. Why? Because these little youth kids are going to shoot too much. And their parents are saying, shoot, shoot, shoot. And they're not in a good stance anyway. See, most of us are standing up in a stance and then we shoot down. Kind of like my brother calls it kamikaze. It's like an airplane crash. We need to be bent at the waist, squatting, and then kind of coming up like a check mark. So we kind of do it opposite sometimes. So down blocking and just kind of waiting sometimes for the bad shot that you know is going to happen, I think is very important. So a lot of down blocking as well would be good for kids. But as far as top is concerned, probably just all we do is a cross wrist, and we don't go to like what we call the Eastern roll, but everyone else calls it a cross wrist tilt like Spencer Lee does. Actually, when I was a younger coach, Nick Lester, he got teched by Jordan Oliver, and Jordan turned everybody with this, and their coach used to be the coach at Clarion with my brother. And he's like, oh, we call it an Eastern roll. You know, these guys in Eastern PA use it all the time. So we call it an Eastern roll. But so I wouldn't do that. We go behind the knee to the bicep, and we call that a rolling tilt. So from top as a youth wrestler, I would just go cross wrist to a rolling tilt, half Nelson, maybe a far side cradle. If their opponent steps up, three techniques, that would be it.
And then roughly, you know, for most kids, most of the time, you'd increase like that. Like each year, you maybe add another three moves per position.
Yeah, it depends on the kids. So what happens is this, right? So let's say I'm a high school coach and I've got eight seniors and I've got four juniors and there's a couple of juniors on JV. And well, guess what? I'm like, when season ends, I'm screwed, right? I'm starting over. So the practice plan that I have used the last two, maybe 3 years, now that I've lost eight seniors and I only have two juniors and everyone else is a freshman, sophomore, I got to like take my practice plan and I got to dummy it down a little bit, right? And so, you know, that's a key concept of what we do is I learned this at Oklahoma State years ago, was your wrestling should get a little bit smaller, not bigger. You know, Jordan Burroughs doesn't wrestle ear to ear in a collar tie. He doesn't collar tie at all, really, but Kyle Schneider does. So what happens in wrestling, and, you know, our coaches at the time, Bruce Burnett, was like, Nick, your problem is this. He's like, if they want to underhook, you'll overhook. If they want to overhook, you'll underhook. If they want to wrestle chest to chest, you'll do it. If you're wrestling John and he wants to wrestle from space, you'll do it. You'll do anything. And I was like, I like that. I want to be dangerous on the mat. Because me and my brother, that was our phrase with the cocky little kids. We used to love drilling. We'd go months without live wrestling. We had notes all over our little wrestling room basement. We just drilled. We love technique. I still do. But we kind of got too much, right? And Bruce was like, he's like, the problem is you're gonna get a guy from Bulgaria who underhooks for a living and you're gonna get your ass beat. And I was like, that makes sense. So, you know, I think as coaches, our wrestling needs to get smaller. So we like to focus on the common positions, the best few ways to score from there. Okay, not to plug our online academy, but we do have basics, phase one, phase two, phase three. And so there's levels, you know, in gymnastics. Actually, my niece is a two-time all-around level 10 gymnast state champ in Missouri. She just signed with Arizona State literally 10 days ago. So in gymnastics, I was very intrigued by that sport when my daughter did it. I was like, they're organized, right? So like, you know, the level 7 gymnastics routine on a balance beam is the same in Maryland as it is in Missouri. Where in wrestling, we have 18-year-olds practicing half Nelsons, and we have 6-year-olds practicing how to score from a Russian 2-on-1. It's completely stupid. And years ago in 99, when I quit my job in Texas and moved back to Missouri and decided to coach for a living, I realized if my kids don't win, I don't have a job. So I had to get very organized, and I started to really kind of like become psychotically obsessed with coaching and systematically making wrestling organized, right? So let's say there's 6,000 wrestling techniques, you know, we like to look at the common positions, what's the best few ways to score, prioritize those based upon need and necessity, and also kind of compartmentalize those in order of importance for the age level and skill level. Because there are some techniques that are common to wrestling in general. So like on our basics phase, a rolling till is a technique, but it's also can be used. Kendall Cross, I used it in high school as my best turn, and I didn't use that in college because I thought it was a kid's move. And I saw Kendall when I was a redshirt turning kids with it, and I was like, I'm going back to use my tilt again. All right. So I started using it again. Right. So sometimes we go through these sort of like evolutions, but they're so like a 6 year old, the proper way for a 6 year old to catch a grounder is no different than the St. Louis Cardinals are catching a grounder today. Why? Baseball is baseball. How do you shoot a free throw? It's the same. You're going to shoot it the same way LeBron James does. I don't care if you're a girl who's in eighth grade, who's a first year basketball player. This is how you do it. So there are techniques that are wrestling techniques that you have to know, right? But the problem is we get down in the weeds and we start practicing 13 different ways to score a rushing 2-on-1. And I'm like, bro, your kid's right-handed and he has a left leg lead wrestling stance. You don't need to be worrying about how to kind of rush in 2-on-1. No one uses a rushing 2-on-1 anyway, because I mean, doesn't really work very well at folk style level, you know, for the most part. So yeah, as far as being systematic, I think focusing on the common positions is a good place to start. And then just using some good old fashioned common sense, but understand that your practice plan that you use in your varsity room when you had 8 seniors and the rest are juniors, and next year you're going to have all the freshmen on the mat. Most of those are first, second, third year. You might have to narrow down your practice plan at least until December or January, right? And that's something else I think we make the mistake of. We're like, I've heard coaches say this. They're like, we haven't even had a chance to practice cradles yet. I'm like, dude, it's February. It's like, I know, but we didn't master this other stuff yet. Well, my plan is, and this is what I tell my coaches to do and what I did. My first year of a high school coach, I was a joke. My second year, I was pretty damn good, I believe. And then I just kind of like did a pretty good job, I think, my last 2 years as a high school coach. We just kind of puked out all the drills. I had like 3 pages of drills, and we spent the first 2 weeks of practice, long practices, 2 hour and 45 minute practice. We went 30 minutes alive. We did mini camps on Saturday and we got it all done. So then by the second week of season, we weren't learning anything new. It was already done. And people are like, well, we don't want to go to a single leg yet. Our double leg still looks crappy. I'm like, it's going to look crappy. It's going to look crappy in, at the state tournament probably, because your kids are kind of new to wrestling. Let's get our practice plan all taught within the first 2 weeks of season. Then I say, okay, number one, man, collar tight, ear to ear, underhook throw by 1 minute, go. Time number two, go. All right, ear to ear, collar tie, or collar tie. We're going to elbow pass to a drive single leg, go. Number two, go. And you just a stopwatch. You got, you know, Gatorade stopwatch and a whistle. And man, you're just coaching wrestling, but you haven't shown a wrestling technique in weeks because we did this the first 2 weeks of season and our practice plan was all laid out and we're just doing this. That does not mean you might not get one team who's like a savage cross-face cradle team. You're like, okay, we're going to spend a lot of time this practice, you know, countering a cross-face cradle, because we have to like shore up our wrestling for this specific team that we're going to face. But as for the most part, I think that we don't progress until something is perfected, big mistake, and we move too slow. These kids can move they can learn 1,000 times faster than you give them credit for. Let's go, you know? So there's my 2 cents.
The time is now to take your mindset to the next level with Wrestling Mindset. Make sure you go to our website, WrestlingMindset.com, and sign up for your free trial session today. Don't wait any longer. You want the mental edge right now. When you sign up for the free trial session, you're also going to get a copy of our free ebook, Building the Predator Mindset. This book has helped thousands of people build confidence, relax under pressure, get motivated, and build mental toughness in wrestling, school, and life. Make sure you sign up for your free trial session today. No, I love it. And I like how you said about the making it, getting organized, taking a systematic approach, having the right progression, standardizing things. I'm always thinking about that in my perspective.
Well, you guys do it Wrestling Mindset. You guys, that's what you guys do. You know, you're like the 80-20 rule. You have the common themes, right? And you see that in marketing and sales of big companies. Sure. You see that in politics, right? Both parties stick with their themes and they beat them home. You get tired of hearing about it, but they beat them home. Well, you know, the Iowa Hawkeyes, they beat their system and their style to death. They beat it home. So yeah, I think that simplification is the key, and that's what's helped you guys to have success. And that's the reason you're working with companies and salesmen and, you know, business leaders, not just athletes. And I think that we overdo it sometimes. And, you know, from a systematic standpoint, I wanted to go back to that. You know, in mathematics, you're not going to do geometry until you can do addition and subtraction, long division, multiplication. You shouldn't be doing a Russian two-on-one defense until you know how to hit a single leg to a quick change off, right? So wrestling should be like mathematics. It should be a building. Now, are you going to use addition and subtraction? Elon Musk is using addition and subtraction today at SpaceX. And you're going to hit a single leg quick change off as a six-year-old, and you're going to hit it, as Jason Nolf. He hits one, he hits it too. Because wrestling is wrestling at the end of the day, just like the six-year-old is going to catch a grounder the same way as the St. Louis Cardinals going to. So there are techniques there that we have to understand that are just part of it. That just focus on those, and your kids are going to win, because guess what? These other guys, these other coaches, I mean, they're all over the map. And they mean well, but they need to settle down a little bit. Underteach, overdrill, I think, is the phrase that you should live by. And it's funny because, like, Nate Carr used to come to Oklahoma State a lot and train with Kenny Mundy when he cut down. And I got to know Nate. I mean, one of the greatest human beings on planet Earth. But I was at a tournament about 4 or 5 years ago, and I bumped into him, and he was like, underteach, overdrill. I don't know where he saw it. He saw some video of mine or something. He's like, that works. He was helping at Pinnacle back in the day in Ohio. And he's like, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And this is a guy that was NCAA champ, Olympian, world medalist, Olympic bronze. And he's like, that's what we all need to do. And I think he said that, you know, as he started training at the Olympic Training Center, he started saying our wrestling got simple again. And sometimes we need to understand that we need to come full circle and keep it simple, but we maybe not need to spend years out here anyway, because we're doing a disservice to the kids and we're not going to have any success as a coach.
That makes sense. Now, who are some of your, some of your influences when you were putting together your system? Like, we're talking about at a macro level, not, you know, having to give any kind of specific information. Yeah. At the meta level, who were some of the, like, I could tell you who the people I was thinking of when I put together Wrestling Mindset. I took a little bit of this from here. I took this guy from there. That book, I used that. What were you thinking? Who were some of your influences?
Yeah. Well, I remember when I was done wrestling in Oklahoma State, I needed a break, right? I entered graduate school, got married, and I like hated wrestling for a couple of years. And then I kind of got back into coaching, and then kind of fell in love with it again. And I just decided I want to be a tremendous coach. Like, I want to, like, maybe even be one of the best. And so I got the book, Coaching Wrestling Successfully by Dan Gable. And the only thing I remember from the book, I remember my brother, we fight a lot. So I was in Texas teaching, and Tony was still training, right? He made the world team twice, so he was an awesome wrestler. So we were staying at Jack Spade's house. He was the head coach at OU back in the day. It was Sean Charles was there, Kerry Colot, my brother, and there were a couple other guys. They assembled a training camp at OU for a week, and Tony's like, come on up and get your ass kicked. And so I drove up from Dallas, Texas, and trained with those guys. And we were hanging out in Jack's living room, and I was unpacking, and my brother was making fun of me for having the book, you know, but I was like, dude, the main thing he talks about is you need to have a philosophy, and your philosophy might be different than mine. As long as it's like core skill. I mean, the Penn State philosophy is a little bit different than Iowa, but they're still both very good. But that was a book that really caused me to think about focusing and saying, what is my philosophy as a coach? And that, but I didn't use emotions and say, because some people go to watch a Terry Brands seminar and say, we're all going to wrestle like Terry Brands. We're like, dude, you know, the guy's 5'4". He's literally one of the most strongest human beings on planet Earth. Your kids can't wrestle like that. You can't say, oh, we're going to wrestle like Jordan Burroughs. You can't. So let's say wrestling is wrestling. So let's focus on being a great coach for most of mankind. What athletes do I have walking in the room? Oh, I got one that shoots like Jordan Burroughs. I got one that's as strong as and intense as Terry Brands or as strong as Kyle Snyder. Cool. We might do some different things with them. But, you know, 99% of our athletes are all the same. What's my philosophy based around that? Because we want to churn out like an assembly line, like a factory, people who are very awesome and skilled and compete at the national level and win at the national level. And we can work the individual stuff with the individuals. But I would say that book was very, very good. It was super simple. I really don't think he even shared a whole lot that was like eye-opening, but I had been like psychotically obsessed with wrestling since I was 11. I think it was my 11th birthday was when I started. But that was the takeaway. But as far as other influence, I just knew a wrestling dad that went to a lot of camps and he talked to me about teaching in steps and breaking your techniques down in steps. So that was something that I learned from a wrestling dad. He said, you should do this. I think it's better. And so we kind of have developed our kind of way to teach wrestling. So that was very helpful as well. But that book by Dan Gable and the concept of having a philosophy. But like I said, your philosophy can't change based upon a YouTube video. It's got to be like, wrestling is wrestling. Is this a wrestling philosophy or am I steering emotionally? You know, I've had parents who are like, we need to throw more. And I'm like, why? My kid got thrown this weekend. And I'm like, okay. You know, it's like, I'm going to quit my business. I'm like, dude, you made $1 million. I know, but I didn't make any money last month. I'm like, okay, well, let's not go buy some lawnmowers and start a lawnmowing business. You've had success here. Let's just dig deep and find out what's going wrong. And I'm sure you do that at Wrestling Mindset. You deal with the individual. We all have different personalities. You are probably going to help an athlete with their mental game and their mindset differently if they have, some of us are deep thinkers. Some of us are worry warts. Some kids are laid back. Some people are super intense. I mean, you probably have systems in place that are based upon the psychology and the brain and the emotions and how it works and everything that you've learned and when you're accumulating all these fancy degrees that you have, but then you have to deal with the individual kid too. And wrestling is much the same way.
Right. It's like, if I'm going to speak to kids as a whole, as a group, yeah. I got to speak a certain way because I know if I speak, and then of course, then people say, well, what about this? What about this? Can I tell myself that? Of course, if that's worked for you historically, that's exactly what I want you to do. I can't tell the whole room to do that because that could throw half the kids off. So exactly.
Yeah. That's what I think too, from a technique standpoint and a style. And the biggest mistake I think we make as coaches is we try to coach a style of wrestling and the colleges don't even do it anymore. Right. They teach the individual a lot. And so you might start seeing some like common themes and especially the messaging and communication of the athletes to the video camera, the coach when he's being interviewed. And you can kind of tell that, and there's a phrase that says the athletes tend to adopt the personality of their coach. I think that's very true to a certain extent, but, I think they all have a philosophy in place. I remember Tom Brands a few years ago was like, there's probably not a whole lot of differences between the Iowa room and the John Smith room and the Cale Sanderson room. There's probably a lot more similarities than you think. And I was like, bingo, I would agree with that.
I'm sure. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. The principles are going to be the same wherever they are, right?
Yeah.
So I guess when I think about the techniques themselves, did you look at it and say, okay, the 80-20 principle, Pareto's principle, it's like what 20% that's scoring 80% of the you know, scores right there basically. And then kind of look at it. Well, what are the 20% of moves from those specific positions. Is that how you kind of broke it down mentally, conceptualized it? Like when you're thinking about how to teach techniques, like at what age, what are kids score? What positions are they in? And then what are they like a collar tie? Perfect. Right. Yeah. People are always going to collar tie your head. So at like the age 6 or 7, what should they be doing from there? At the age of 10, is that how you were kind of looking at it?
Yeah. So when I first started our academy, our kids trained with us because we're academy, not club. Right. So like club is me and my coach, we have the same 40 guys and girls, and they train 4 days a week with us and we coach them on weekends. That's a club, right? Just like a team. Right. But a club is like, you know, you join, there's a membership, right? I mean, you get it. And they got their facilities or whatever. We're academy. All of our kids train and practice with their own teams. Now we do have a kind of a smaller club kind of affiliation for our kids that need it. And that's actually growing. But so I really have only been coaching our kids back in the day, 1 day a week. That's it. 1 day a week year round. And it wasn't until about 2003 or 2004 or 2005 that a lot of kids trained year round, just out of necessity. Right. So I'm like, I have very limited time. I got 2 hours, 2.5 hours a week with our guys. I had to really get core skills, we call it. And then our kids started like doing great. And so we added locations, and then some kids were coming 2 days a week and getting this amazing practice plan. So it probably, they were guinea pigs, and I was experimenting, but I wasn't experimenting with their future or their career. Cause I wrestled Oklahoma State, and I would train with John Smith twice a week year round for like 6 years. And I had great coaches, and I was, you know, and I had great coaches growing up and a twin brother. I mean, so I kind of had a foundation of some ideas here, but so I had to get very sort of systematic because our kids only train with us once a week. And then they started coming twice a week, and I added locations. Then like, okay, I can come 3 times a week. And then I added, that was PWA, Pearler Wrestling Academy. Then we had a Pearler Wrestling Academy Elite. We go from a 1-page drill plan to just over a 3-page drill plan. And then our Pearler Wrestling Academy WCWP, World Class Wrestler Program, has a 6.5-page drill plan. But everything that's on that drill plan is on our core skills. So we have core skills, elite, and world class wrestler program. We don't have a beginner's academy. We do beginner's camps and clinics. But so I kind of started in the reverse, where I was coaching really pretty, not high level. Some of them were, but very serious middle school kids, and a handful of youth, and a handful of high school. And so when I formulated everything, it was very much like, okay, single leg, high crotch, double leg. We added a low single leg because, I mean, that's a great way to score. And it's a level change drill. And fireman's carry, there's probably only 5 leg attacks. And we had, you know, front headlock. We hear all the time. So, you know, we had our main ways to score from there, which back in the day, I think it was a wrist trap, go behind, and a shuck. And now we have added a knee tap with 2 finishes. But everything was based upon not the 80-20 rule, but the 90-5-5 rule. When you see David Carr score from a front headlock, we're like, okay, let's do that. So that's really a good place to start. And everything that we do, we'll work at a college level or we wouldn't do it. Maybe not in our beginners, our basics phase, which is basically a beginner's phase. I just took the name beginners off of it because people weren't utilizing it as a tool that they should. Because there's kids wrestle 7, 8, 9 years who don't know what's on some of that basic space. But let's say the 95-5 rule. And let's get 2 ways to score from a collar tie, ear-to-ear collar tie, and just hit those. And your kids are going to start winning. It's going to be like magic. And your practice plan is going to be about 1 page.
That makes sense. And then from those common positions, would you say there's, have you broke it down that deep where that these are the most common ways people are finishing from those situations?
Yeah. But I didn't
kind of eyeball it. You have your experience. Yeah,
you can kind of eyeball that too. But I will say that, like, I'm kind of nutty. I don't have a lot of hobbies, right? So like I used to watch wrestling every night, and I would see like little finishes and what looks like a scramble or like luck. Okay, so Nick Saban sees a different, you know, the, what's the NFL championship? You know, the Super Bowl. Nick Saban sees a different Super Bowl game than I see. My wife sees a different one than I see too. She doesn't know anything about football, and I really know nothing here, so I'm not a good example. But so I see a different wrestling match when I watch the Olympics, and so do you, than maybe a high school coach who wrestled 2 years in high school, went to college for football, maybe went to the military. He doesn't see the same match I see. So I used to just take a piece of paper and I write like little tricks and techniques down. And I just stuffed them into a big yellow envelope. And this thing was like, after about a year, I dumped it all out. And I already had my core skills practice plan because my academy, and we were winning right off the bat. So I had this earmarked since I was a high school coach. So as a high school coach, we had daily drills. Okay, everybody walk in, look at the wall. There's a piece of paper there. So it might be down block, go behind, might be single leg snake and spin, might be knee slide, stand up with two ways to break the hands. So we had like five daily drills. We had like three daily drills. And so one day this piece of paper is up there, and that's the first 30 minutes of practice. And I learned that from Harry Wong when I was like getting studying teaching and how to become a great teacher. And he was like, you know, most teachers, they walk into a classroom like, okay, settle down, class, right? Maybe she gets distracted. She's in the hallway chatting with a teacher. She closes the door. It's freaking chaos. And she's like, okay, let me take attendance. Okay, you know, but he said there should be a bell ringer. So when the bell rings, there should be an assignment on the chalkboard. And it's worth like 10 points, and you can trade two test grades for the bell ringer. And so teacher's in the hallway chatting. She said, okay, have a good class. She walks in, class is quiet. She takes attendance and they're all looking at the bell ringer. They're digging through their book. The class got started by this assignment that was on the board that's very useful to them. It's like a piece of gold. They get to trade a test grade for this. And she doesn't have to worry about the 15 minutes of trying to calm these kids down. Their emotions are psychotic if they're just throwing stuff and chatting and sitting on each other's desk. So I took that concept into wrestling, but I had a daily drill. And a daily drill was double leg, single leg, snap down, stand up, cross face cradle, the basic turns, right? So again, you can eyeball it. You can even be a very limited coach. And you know that at the youth level, we should drill a half Nelson every day, you know, maybe a cross face cradle, single leg. So that's how I got my start. And that was also somebody, going back to another question, was like an inspiration. I believe it's Harry Wong. I know it is, but he like revolutionized how we're supposed to teach. I don't think anything much has changed in the past 150 years, actually. But that was very inspirational too. And all the coaches could use that as well. So you take your core skills that you have, because remember, a six-year-old is going to catch a grounder the same way a St. Louis Cardinal is. So let's catch a grounder. You might not work double plays yet. Your high school team should work double plays. Maybe not your freshman high school team. Right. So this catching a grounder and practicing double plays is part of your baseball practice plan for your varsity, but maybe not for your freshman. And you're sure as hell not going to practice double plays in probably normal peewee baseball. So, you know, think about these analogies. And I think it would be very helpful. But a bell ringer in the Harry Wong approach, I thought was tremendous. And when I was trying to come up with a bell ringer, I was like, how are most of the points scored? There it is, right?
And so you would have that up right there. And you'd have that up on the board and say, hey, this is what we're doing today. This is the drill of the day.
I mopped the mats because I wanted the room ready. So I would mop the mats and they were ready. When the kids walked in, it was time to go. And then I could spend some time doing paperwork if I had to, chatting and just walking around helping the kids. But I think that's very important if you could implement that Harry Wong strategy. But, you know, again, 95% of your points come from 5% of the wrestling. Just focus there and you're going to be in the wheelhouse, and you can expand from that with your advanced varsity kids, but you're not going to expand from that very much with the beginner freshman or the Pee Wee team with the kids of 3 less years of experience.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
What else did we miss? I'm sure quite a bit, but anything else that you wanted to hit on?
Yeah, no. I would hit on, you know, spending, I tell our kids, you should spend about 2 hours a week listening, studying the sports psychology side of wrestling, your website, what you guys have written. You can just go to Track Wrestling and there's a playlist there. I believe it's just on a playlist. I've seen it many times. Where they're interviewing, you can listen to a Kale Sanderson interview. You can listen to, you know, there was an article in Win Magazine. I'm a big fan of Win Magazine also. Brian Van Clay, he's a good friend of mine. He's his magazine is tremendous. But there was like Kyle Dake talking to Yanni about what he needed to do to win a fourth title. That article is career changing. And some of you guys didn't read it, right? But I guarantee you, a mom running onto a wrestling mat and grabbing a little kid by the ankles who's pinning her son, that'll have 30 million views. You got time for that, but you don't have time to go to YouTube and listen to the Gene Zanetti mindset principles. Oh, I don't have time for that. So it's kind of like frustrating from a coaching standpoint. And then some people say, well, I don't have the money for it. I'm like, dude, you just spent $900 going to Georgia Nationals, which isn't even a Nationals. It's just a big open tournament. You went 1-2. Your kid wrestled 7 minutes and 32 seconds. And you had a smile on your face driving home because you got experience. That $900, you could have bought a home wrestling mat. You could hire a freaking high school kid to come over and train with your kid. You could have got the wrestling mindset course and studied it, you know, or, you know, maybe our online academy, maybe went to a camp. So I feel like your time and money, you probably just are not allocating it correctly. But I do think that not just for the athlete, the coaches. I tell my parents, we just had a guy, Christopher, and his son, John. I won't mention his last name, but you know, his son's struggling a little bit. He's kind of hot and cold or whatever. And I told the dad, I go, sometimes, I'm not saying he was doing this, but a lot of times the parents are the one ruining their kids' opportunities. I had a kid, he was actually a 5-time Fargo finalist, won it a couple of times. Wrestled in college, Division I. It just didn't work out for various reasons. Dad still is a friend of mine. I'm like, Craig, I mean, dude, we're buddies, man. We just had a couple of beers. I mean, you're a good dude, but dude, you're a freaking moron. Leave the kid alone, you know? Before the state freestyle finals, he grabs him by the arm. The kid's like literally taking his t-shirt off to go on the mat, pulling his singles out. Now remember, watch out for that single leg and be careful of this. And the kid loses. And his dad was furious. And Tim didn't even come near me or his dad. This was 18 years ago. I'm like, you did that. He's like, what? I'm like, you scared the shit out of him. Watch out for this. Beware of that. Okay. So parents, kids, you need to learn how the emotions work. Good thoughts create good emotions. Bad thoughts create bad emotions. Control your emotions. Learn the sports psychology side of wrestling. Read the article that Kyle Dake gave when he was telling Yanni, do this, don't do this. This is how when you do these things, you have a good chance of winning. I mean, it's just like study. We study technique so much. And this is my advice because of what I did. You know, I graduated from Oklahoma State in 94. And back then it was like, you know, high school college practices were kind of ran like high school practices, a bunch of guys in a room, drilling some practice plan moves, do technique. Now college wrestling is all individual, right? Individual training, individual specialized. That's the reason college wrestling is getting so good. And they have sports psychologists on staff. They have nutritionists. They have like strength coaches, individual weightlifting plans and mobility workouts for the athletes based upon their needs. I mean, college sports is very cool nowadays, but I remember one time Kenny Monday was like, Pearlie, you know what your problem is? And I was like, what? He goes, you think wrestling's all about wrestling technique. And he just walked away. And I was so stupid. I was like, huh? Maybe I was a little bit mad. I don't know, but I worship Kenny. He's still, he was Olympic champ and just a great guy too. But I was too stupid. I should have tackled him by the ankles and said, no, you're not going to walk away. You tell me, what do you mean by that? Because I really want to be good and I'm not winning as much as I would like, you know? But we didn't, you know, to read sports psychology, I mean, you almost had to go into the library at the college and get out microfiche and look under the freaking screen and all. Nowadays, you can just listen to YouTube. You can go to the Wrestling Mindset website. You can just listen to the Cale Sanderson interviews or the Yanni or the Kyle Schneider interviews and all these famous coaches and athletes who are winning at a very high level. Helen Merola's, listen to her, every interview she has. I mean, she won the Olympics and dude, I think she could have medaled in the guys' Olympics. She's so good, right? You can learn from these people. So a lot of times it's not just your technique that is the issue. There's a good phrase that says, you know, technique won't fix the attitude problem. A lot of times it isn't the attitude of not wanting it bad enough, not being a hard enough worker. There's plenty of kids who want to win really bad, but this is getting in the way. Strength and conditioning is a big part of sports nowadays, and it really wasn't. But, you know, it's almost got to be a multifaceted approach. It can't just be about technique. And I think that's the big shift that I have seen over the past 15 years is that, you know, when you listen to these men and women getting interviewed or these coaches, you know, there's some common themes there about mindset. And, you know, it's the same things that you guys preach nonstop. And I don't think we pay enough attention to. It's like marinating a steak. You got to marinate your brain because your confidence is never fixed. Your confidence is always coming and going, right? And it's something that's got to be nurtured a couple of hours a week, just like Serena Williams, her backhand has to be nurtured. If she loses her backhand just by 1%, she's down to number 15 in the world from number one, right? And so I think we got to spend a lot of time on learning how the mind works, and the parents do too, because sometimes the parents and coaches, they don't know, and they're the ones spooking and scaring their kids and overcoaching them. And I think the whole family needs to study the sports psychology side of wrestling, because that's sort of the glue that's going to put everything together. It's not just wrestling technique.
It's being the total package. And like you said, things do fluctuate. It never just stays still. It's like your confidence could fluctuate. And then your focus, which would be a different mental muscle, that fluctuates. Your motivation fluctuates. So it's all, you know, it's constantly moving. And then, like you said, of course, the technique, you can have all the confidence in the world. If you don't know how to play the violin, you can't play the violin. That's it. You can be super confident. It doesn't make a difference. You got to learn the technique.
But if you're a great violinist and you can't get in front of stage in front of people, then no one's ever going to know you're a great violinist because you're up there stuttering around. So it's just almost like you got to attack all of it, you know. Now we spend more time on the technique side of wrestling because it takes time, right? But you know, I do think that the strength and conditioning side of wrestling is underutilized at the high school and youth level. And I definitely think that the wrestling mindset and confidence and knowing how your thoughts and emotions work. And some dads, I say dads, because usually it is dads, they're trying to coach their kid. These kids they're different than you, you know, they're different than you. So you might have one son or daughter who you can kind of vibe with, but your other wrestler or son is not broken because they're not like you, or, you know. So learning that we're all a little bit different. Some people are very laid back, You know, some people are not. Some people are very intense. That can be an issue. Kerry Colot says he needed Bruce Burnett Mattside because Kerry was so intense. He needed a guy that was calm and chill, right? Well, some people don't like calm and chill. Some people want a coach in their ear getting them hyped up because, right? So I think that sometimes the parents, once you learn some of these things, now the coach, the athlete, and the parent are all operating with the same wheelhouse and nobody's sabotaging the deal. And so parents got to study the sports psychology side of wrestling just like the kids do, and so do the coaches.
Right, creating a well-oiled machine where everyone's speaking the same language, around the same page. I mean, ultimately, everyone's trying to do the same thing, the peak performance of the athlete for the betterment of his overall good, obviously, mm-hmm. not at the expense of his mental, physical health. But yeah, if everyone's on the same page, it's going to be a much smoother ride and it's going to be a lot more fun.
Yep, 100%.
Awesome. Nick, great speaking with you. Where can we send people to get more of your information?
Yeah, just go to perlerwrestling.com. We would love to have you. We have weekly academy. We have competition camps. They're once a month. We do a overnight weekly competition camp. I say competition camp. There's about 4 hours of drill time, 5.5 hours of live, because I realized, like we said, you go to Georgia Nationals and you get like 8 minutes of wrestling. So we just finished last night and we had 177 kids from 23 different states. So they come from everywhere just for the weekend. We have a 26,000 square foot training facility just north of St. Louis, 10 acres. We have 3 wrestling rooms, a big strength and conditioning room, kitchen, 214 beds. So everything's right there. We also do summer camps, our online wrestling course we've talked about. And we also do private team camps where we travel the nation and teach our system to teams. And they can use that as a fundraiser. I've got teams making over 15 grand in a week off of our camp. So their private team camps are very popular. We sold out this year, though. We sold out last year, too. So that's kind of the 5 prongs of what we do. That we also just started it's called Perler Performance. It's our strength and conditioning leg. And we have online courses there. And then we also started in jiu-jitsu. So my son's in jiu-jitsu. We just built a new 8,100 square foot facility for him and my daughter. So, and my daughter-in-law and son-in-law. So we kind of got our fingers in the combative sports a lot now. And Evan Elder, the UFC guy, he's coming in tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock to train with us. So anyway, perlerwrestling.com, perlerperformance.com, perlercombataccademy.com. Everything is there.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Nick. This was great.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.